1, 2, 3. Welcome to the Smartest Amazon Seller Podcast. Hey, I'm your host, Scott Needham. I'm an Amazon seller for 12 years now. And you know what? I found someone that's been doing it for maybe double my time. I have with me someone that has worked with more brands than he can even count and was a former co-founder of Vayner Commerce with Gary Vee, now running a growth program. I've got Sabir Samarkand. Welcome to the podcast.
Scott, thank you for having me.
All right. So I heard 25 years from you that you've been involved in e-commerce. You know what? Nothing's changed. It's probably the same business as it was 25 years ago, right?
You know, there's a funny story behind that. You know, like I wanted to become a neurosurgeon, right? And the reason I didn't go for that was I would have had to go to school for another 12, 14 years before I could do brain surgery, right? And then I decided, you know what, I'm going to go into computer science and go with that field because, you know, not much is going to innovate, I guess, right? That was my intelligence at 20 or 19. So I chose a field and then I chose this field, e-commerce, 25 years ago that changes literally now, thanks to AI, now it's changing on a daily basis.
The conversation moves fast. And I actually do feel this last year with a lot of the new marketplaces that are getting a little bit of traction. I'm like, wow, like things are moving. Aside from that, even like the OGs like Amazon, I think they tacked on almost, while the percentage growth isn't as significant, the GMV that they tack on every year is like 50, 60, $70 billion. Of growth. It's still, you know, a good time. Like e-commerce is just like ubiquitous. But tell me a little bit more about, you know, some of the major points of your background. I mean, obviously, like, you know, working for Vayner Commerce is a really interesting part of your background, but how you have evolved in helping e-commerce companies and brands.
Yeah. So initially when I started out, I was a computer scientist initially. This is before 25 years, right? And then I was given a chance at, if you see on one of my case studies on the website is a Vitamin Shoppe, right? So the Vitamin Shoppe was my very first try at revenue growth. Being a computer scientist, you are a software engineer. You know how to architect things. It's very technical, right? And what happened was the owner of that company, when he brought me in, that vitaminshop.com was bankrupt. So he had bought it from a bankruptcy court, all the assets and stuff. So he wanted somebody who could put it back together. And through his network, in those days, I was known as the dot-com guy, the guy you hire if you want your dot-com to succeed and launch, right? So he brought me in. And during that period, I helped launch harryallis.com, tommy.com, Tommy Hilfiger, TheStreet.com with Jim Cramer, many, many other businesses like that. So I was well known as that guy. So as an engineer, though, I come in, I put back vitaminshop.com back together, and I go like, can you connect me with the guy that I need to talk to or gal that's going to help me drive traffic to this with marketing and stuff? He goes like, what are you talking about? It's you. You know, it's you. I'm expecting you to do those things. I said, no, I'm, you know, it sounded like Star Trek. I am a engineer, not a marketer, you know, to Captain Kirk. So it was Jeff Horowitz, who was the founder of Vitamin Shoppe. So he goes like, oh, no, you know what? I'm going to teach you the vitamin business. You need to pick up a couple of books on marketing. You're the one who's going to be doing this.
And the truth is back then, I guarantee you, there weren't a lot of people that really understood. Today, there's a lot of good information out there, but 20 years ago, no way.
So I'm going to comment on that. There's good information and bad information out there, very bad information that can harm your business, you know? So what happened, actually, just kind of a time frame perspective, Google had just come out of Stanford and now is being public and it's starting to threaten Alta Vista and Yahoo, you know? So, and Facebook, Instagram, none of the social platforms existed at that time, right? So a lot of things that make life so easy today with e-commerce, at least from my perspective, right? All that infrastructure didn't exist, you know, because it was giving birth to at that time, right? So that one, I took it from bankruptcy. It was bankrupt when I took it over. But just before bankruptcy, it was a $12 million channel. I took it from $12 million to $52 million on my first try.
What was a major lever?
So the major lever, I can point to the fact that I was not a regular marketer. And to me, there were no guardrails, right? I was completely not from this department, Not that I took my degree in marketing from NYU or Harvard or anything like that. I didn't have any guardrails to tell me, oh, you should do this or not do this in marketing or sales, right? I was an engineer. To me, at my core, whatever I do test, learn, and optimize. That gets beaten into you in your chemistry lab, in your physics lab, in your mathematics. Everything you do, you have to test it. There is no ego about it. It's just purely testing the thesis, whether it works and you want to do more of it to scale it up, or it doesn't work, change the parameters, retest, or abandon it and come up with another test. That's it. And for these 25 years, this is how you grow $1 billion in incremental revenue.
Yeah, no, for sure. I've done lots of tests, and unfortunately, I feel like more of my tests don't work. You know, they don't like take off, but there's a few that I've been like, okay, that was worth it. You know, I'm going to like lean into that. And, you know, the internet is actually really, e-commerce is so prime for tests because there's a lot of different options. So take me to the next phases.
I did that one, first one. It worked great. I said, oh, this is great. I just found a completely a different field that I could be part of. I didn't have any formal training. The only thing I took was accounting 101 and economics 101 because that was required for the bachelor's degree for computer science, right? So I just kept on. What I did was I went for the second and third. I did it. Again, very successful.
And to your point, I actually feel like even today, marketing that gets taught at schools, that's not internet marketing. It's a different beast with like, you know, just the even the idea of collecting emails and what to do with it. It's just a very digital first approach. And so maybe I was in the wrong marketing classes, but I don't know if like, you know, traditional marketing that it gets taught is quite the same as like what I look for when I'm hiring and expanding my team.
I did teach also at universities. So that's one of my recent experiences too. I've actually guest lectured at Harvard Business School. I've also been a professor at Queens College, the City University of New York, right? Teaching e-commerce and Amazon and AI and stuff like that. I've done that. What I see is e-commerce is it's a mix of different practices that you need to know. So it's marketing, it's sales, and it's tech. Those three things you really need to know at a minimum, because you need to know also logistics. You know, you need to know, and being an Amazon seller and an Amazon platform, from your perspective, Scott, you know how logistics is so critical to your success, especially with Amazon.
Yeah, and it's tricky. Like there's ways to optimize that really make a big difference. And so while FBA is easy, you know, when you're scaling and optimizing, there's like there's little things that people kind of, you got to learn. Cool. Well, I want to jump in. Co-founding Vayner Commerce, a lot of my audience will know about Gary Vee and his rise, but what was that like?
So Gary Vee founded with his brother, AJ, founded VaynerMedia, right? Primarily focused on what he was really good at, which was unlocking this amazing growth for your brand on the social media platforms. And also for a lot of the CPG brands and stuff like that, you're able to, as long as you have your brand on top of consumers' minds, which is social media was that outlet for them. It was no longer just TV advertising, right? He had a meteoric rise because of it, right? When you do that, you eventually, what happens is the brands caught up in the timeline of human history, right? They caught up to now it's no longer just brand awareness. We are doing e-commerce. And e-commerce for most brands at that level means that they're working with Amazon, right? So most of them, that's what e-commerce means to them, right? But also there were other intelligent ones that actually what they did was they set up their Shopify site and they did their own WooCommerce or BigCommerce or anything like that to own the brand. And when you went to the branded site, you actually had e-commerce on that site. So when the conversation started changing, and Gary Vee is really well known for identifying these kind of trends ahead of everybody else, right? Because first he was in it because all the brands were working with him, top brands were working with him at that time. They were asking him to, hey, can you take over the e-commerce part of it too? Because of his prior experience with Wine Library, right? But the thing is, his VaynerMedia was much more structured towards building that brand awareness, driving sales to Walmart and Target and retail stores and maybe driving traffic to the website. But not the e-commerce is a different animal, you know, because you're looking at all parts of the funnel and seeing that, is it going to convert? Is it going to retarget? The practice is different, right? Now, even though there are similarities, but the practice is different between building brand awareness versus driving sales. It's completely different, right? So during that time, he was thinking of actually introducing e-commerce practice to VaynerMedia, right? So there's a little bit of a backstory. It's on my YouTube channel of how Gary Vee and I met. It's just serendipitous. Just to give you a quick, briefly, I can tell you about it. What happened was, you know, I had started a company. He had started VaynerMedia. He got a shared office. I got a shared office in the same place. I did not know anything about him at that time. And then it just so happened that at that time in that facility, I was one of the top guys, entrepreneurs who has had a lot of battle scars on my back, right? Meaning that I've had so much success with these growths and stuff like that with brands and really practical experience. So his VaynerMedia at that time was like 5-6 people. That's it. You know, very, very early days. It was him, his brother, and three of his brother's friends and one of his friends, something like that. That was it. That was VaynerMedia at that time. So his team, you know, would reach out to me and say, hey, we're trying to test this kind of thing out on Yammer or Twitter or whatever. They were experimenting with a lot of things. This was early days of social media and stuff like that to see, can you do a panel, like a virtual event on, and think of it, this conversation happened in like 2009, 2010, very early days of social media, right? So they would reach out to me. I would say, okay, no problem. Because we shared offices literally outside of each other. Like we were next to each other. That's how close we were, right? And I would just say, yes, no problem. Let me share my knowledge, just like I'm doing here on your podcast. I would do the same thing with them. And then we just built out a relationship, a mutual respect and stuff like that. VaynerMedia started growing. They grew out of that place. So they left. I sold my company. I left that place too, right? And then six years later, I'm at Canon and I'm helping them grow, right? And their challenge was they were stagnant at 100 million and they needed to grow their e-commerce business to start growing again. So I helped them roadmap $1 billion roadmap, which they're executing and they're doing really well right now. So somebody from his team reached out to me and said, oh, there is this agency. We looked at your background. You're a perfect fit. We're looking for like a co-founder, somebody who can take the helm and launch this thing and bring these kind of services, e-com services, to its clients on the media side, right? So I said, oh, that's interesting because not many agencies existed at that time. None of them didn't exist at that time. So I said, that's really weird. Who wants to do this? He goes like, you may not know him. He's really known in the YouTube circles and social media and stuff. His name is Gary Vee. I go like, oh, Gary Vee, I know him. You know, we were friends, but we lost track of each other. He had started a company, 6 people. Go like, how big is VaynerMedia now? He goes like, oh, it's like 300 people now. I'm like, wow, congrats to Gary Vee, you know, incredible. I said, just mention my name. He knows me. If he remembers, you know, because we used to share an office together. So, you know, I'll come out and meet with him. And I met with him. We hit it off really well. And we started that. And I was, you know, I built out all of these knowledge that I've had. We built out services around it. So to just drop names there, Swedish Fish, Sour Patch Kids, Pepsi brands, variety of Pepsi brands, variety of like Mondelez brands like Oreo, Chips Ahoy and Oreos and so many of these kind of brands. And also smaller brands too, like Young Nails was one of those brands there that I helped and several others that when we brought in this framework that I was maturing over time as part of my experience. Now, actually, I call it the 8D method. You know, there's a name to it because I look at 8 dimensions of the business. That's what makes me very unique. And in 12-week period, I would actually take a business, an e-com business and 2x it in 12 weeks. In 12 weeks, you cannot even scratch the surface. But in my case, with the 8D method, you can 2x your business. Some of our clients with the case studies that you can find on growthbysabir.com, you'll see that they have grown, you know, 3x, 4x in 6 weeks. You know, some of them, when they graduated the 12-week program, they grew 6.5x. And these are not small numbers. You know, they start at 1 million. They're a $6.5 million dollar business in 12
weeks.
So
this is the part I really wanted to jump in and kind of like unpack. Like I love it when guests, you know, have done a little bit of work to like organize their own thoughts. So you have experience. We were talking earlier about this 8-dimension method. Let's jump in because this is the type of things that like, you know, I think a lot of the audience that they're running their own e-commerce business. And so, you know, let's give them a few nuggets. You know, some may sound obvious, but they're actually maybe hard to implement. So tell us more about this eight-dimensional method. I'm hoping that, you know, we find a few that we jump into. We're like, okay, let's chat about this.
All right. So the eight dimensions, I start the very first week, and some of my clients have actually seen a 50% growth in that first week of, you know, when we do the kickoff, you know. The very first thing is performance optimization, right? And when I say performance optimization, first, the first place I attack is the website. Because anything that you do, you will drive traffic to it, whether you're doing organic SEO, email marketing, if you're selling on Amazon, it's your site. It's your presence on Amazon PDP pages or your Shopify site, right? That's where you're driving the traffic. And if that is not clicking with the consumer, you're losing sales. And the one parameter that I look at, and here's the thing, with 25 years of experience, this is probably the first time you're going to hear, I don't care for e-commerce conversion rate. It's one of the BS KPIs that exist, and you should not operate your business based on conversion rate. You know, it's a disastrous KPI to look at, right? It's meaningless. It doesn't do anything for you. Instead, what I do is I look at two things. One, I look at session value. Session value means, and you can get a session value also from as an Amazon seller, you can get that, meaning that how many people looked at your product page and how many of them actually purchased. So if you divide those two numbers, the product revenue over the product views, that gives you the session value.
Is that not also a conversion rate number?
In dollars, not percentage. The percentage is the thing that's misleading. The session dollar, when you look at the session dollar, session value, now, if you look at any of the paid methods that you have, and you say that, oh, my CPC is 50 cents or 70 cents, but I generate $2.50 from my sessions, right? All the sessions that I bring in, this is the revenue. The productivity of the session is $2.50, and it's cost me 50 cents to drive that traffic. My ROAS is 5. It's more useful that way.
Yes. I read you. It's not the same number. And definitely it's almost like a closer to like a cost of acquisition.
Cost of acquisition is also derivative. The thing is, let me explain, like cost per acquisition, especially for a replenishable business, when you buy that customer, cause you are buying that customer for the first time, right? Cause your CPA is $15, right? The thing is, if this is a replenishable business, that $15 is not your $15 because you didn't take into account the lifetime value of that customer. When you do that and you look at, okay, if it's a one-time purchaser is $15. If that person purchases a second time, that $15 could go down to zero. So, or the third time they buy, then it goes down to zero. Depending on your gross margin and net margin, you have to think about it so that the answer is not very clear. And that's why when you're looking at the KPIs and not looking at the full picture, that's what throws off a lot of businesses. That's why, unfortunately, you see these businesses go bankrupt.
Yeah, I think we're following you. These numbers are related, but I think you're championing the revenue per session. And because I think that informs your advertising, you know, focus. Is that part of the first step, this revenue per session?
No. So the first one is performance optimization. The second part of that performance optimization is what I call your consumer attention span, right? What do you think, Scott, the consumer attention span is in 2024?
4 seconds.
Wow.
2 to 4 seconds. What I'm saying is, you know, like the initial, you're right. You've got about 2 seconds to like win them.
1.7 seconds. If you did not, and when I say that, that includes you doing the page download. So that's the technical part of it. So I'm sure that if you have audience members who are very technically savvy and they do technical SEO optimization or technical optimization of their website or their pages or images and stuff like that, they'll go like, oh yeah, my page downloads in 1.7. No, that's one part of it. The other part is within 1.7 seconds, you have to make your value proposition. Like, why should I care to even engage in scrolling through whatever you're showing me, right? It's 1.7 seconds. And where does this 1.7 seconds come from? It comes from TikTok, it comes from Reels, and thank you, Amazon app, right? These three platforms have conditioned billions of people across the world to have an attention span of 1.7 seconds. At the beginning of e-com, I usually would optimize for 8 seconds. So 25 years ago, it was 8 seconds was the attention span. It over time, and thanks to social media, it has actually come down to 1.7 seconds.
We've also, a lot of consumers have been trained what to look for. And so like, if it's your first time to Amazon, you don't know, okay, reviews right here, image here. And now in 1.7 seconds, now that the consumer is trained, they can evaluate something real quick and make a lot of gut decisions like that. I remember shopping when I was in college and like, I would go like reviews, like I would be like, I would just dig everywhere. And now I'm the fast consumer. I'm like, if I got a need, I'm doing a search. And within, you know, not even the consideration phase, I probably usually buy something in less than 20 seconds. You know, like I evaluate 3 products, 1, 2, 3, look at reviews, price. Okay, I like it. It looks good enough. Let's go. I can do that in like 20, 30 seconds.
You look for the Prime badge and you make sure that it gets there either today or tomorrow.
Yeah, those are the factors. And so I'm reading you, I'm following you.
And one thing you have to keep in mind, right? Every second you add on top of that 1.7 seconds, your bounce rate increases by 30%. Your conversion rate drops by 30%. So serious money is being lost.
So if you have this short of time, how are you using that?
You know, so that's why you have to optimize. And where are you optimizing? So now let's talk about the device part of it, right? You're optimizing it for the mobile in the US, right? And the mobile device of choice in the US by majority is Apple iPhone. So if your site on Apple iPhone, so if your developer is telling you or designer is telling you, oh yeah, we're mobile optimized, you need to fire them right now. It needs to be optimized for iPhone mobile first for the iPhone device on the Safari, right? Not on a desktop, not on a fancy Mac, right? On a desktop. It needs to be optimized for that because for a lot of the product verticals or categories, 60 to 70% of your revenue is coming from mobile. 30%, less than 30% is coming from a desktop device. And same is true for Amazon platform.
That already spurs a conversation I got to have with my team today.
Yeah, don't fire anybody on a Friday,
right,
though.
No, we don't have, there won't be any firing. It'll be like, okay, project switch.
No, that's a very critical thing. Like a lot of what happens is when you give this stuff off, or you know, when I say team, by the way, that's the 8th dimension in the 8D method, your team, right? When your team, anyone that touches your business is your team. So if you hire somebody on Fiverr for $50, they are your team member. If your mom is packaging your FBA orders to get it sent over to Amazon warehouse, she's a team member, right? Anyone who touches the business, anyone that has any hand in the business is a team member, right? And then they need to understand where your business, where your branding is coming from, what your positioning is, what promotion are you running, collaboration and communication is at the top of that list. That's the 8th dimension. There are in the middle dimensions 2 through 7. We can quickly go through it also.
Let's do it.
Right? So number 2 is pricing, right? When I say pricing, I don't mean pricing promotion, right? That's what e-commerce has been well known for. Like when the topic of pricing comes up, everybody thinks it's a promo code, right? And it's a fight to the bottom line. But when I say pricing, I mean premium pricing, right? You should not chase all the competitors. Your product should have a unique proposition, right? There should be a reason or use. Yeah, unique proposition could be a different showing. You're showing this a different use of your product. Let's say, you know, you and I go, Scott, and this is very typical of Amazon sellers, right? You and I go on AliExpress, right? And we find this amazing cat water fountain, right? And we go like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Let's get it. So most Amazon sellers, what they do is they just grab all the images that AliExpress or similar, you can insert whatever. Oh, I have a better dropshipper. Okay, perfect. Pick that. That's fine, right? Because my point is still the same. You know, they go, they will take the images. If it has some videos, it will take the videos. They will go on Amazon and set up their listing, or they'll set up their own listing, or they're married to another listing that's up there. Maybe they'll also set up their Shopify site, right? So how are you different than 1,000 other sellers that took the same digital course, that learned the same thing, and they're doing the same thing, right? There's not much difference. So what do you do as a seller? It's chased to the bottom line. Oh, you know what? I'm going to put it $1 less, $2 less, $5 less. oh, this person is, oh, they're already $5, 1 cent less. I'm going to be $5, 25 cents less, right? It's just chase to the bottom line. If you and I take the same thing under the 8D method, I will take that product and I'm going to double the price because I'm going to give it a completely a different treatment that the price includes the high value connection they have with the brand, right? Building that brand, which is the next dimension, right? Product positioning and brand building to show that I'm a cat person. I have a cat named Heather. And I'm going to take photos of her actually drinking from the fountain and enjoying it and stuff. I'm going to also take other photos of her playing with toys and other fun things they're doing, spending time with me, spending time with my daughter, spending time with my family, eating and stuff like that to build that kind of a relationship with that consumer to say, oh, you know what? This is the same product, but this guy, this is very different, right? And then they know that since I care so much about my cat, and if you've been a cat owner or a dog owner, a pet parent, right? You obsess about that pet. You'll do a lot of things for them.
You know? Oh, I know.
So, you know, building that third dimension of like product positioning and brand actually rewards you, right? And hopefully you're not just selling the same product, you're private labeling it and you're enhancing it because you know the nuances of how your what parts of it your cat loves and what parts of it it hates, like changing the thing, right? The filters, it gets green too quickly or something like that, or the water is not filtered properly. And you're taking those notes and now you go in and go like, okay, this was successful. Now I'm going to take this product and I'm going to enhance it that nobody else is selling this
product.
Sure,
yeah.
Right? Now you built a cult following behind your product that also touches the next dimension of marketing and it's storytelling, right? Well, once you have that product positioning and your brand platform, the marketing that you're doing is not just screaming at the top of your lungs that I have a promo code coming up for Black Friday, right? Or Mother's Day or Valentine's Day and stuff like that. But you're talking about this new thing you're going to be dropping on a Thursday that you have only limited quantity and you have a premium price on it. But you have built out an amazing story behind that product. So that's what marketing is.
How do you tell a story on Amazon? I've seen very few examples where I'm like, oh, that's really effective. We know that, you know, like social media, it's like prime for that. If you can build that, but not everyone starts with that.
Okay. So for Amazon, I can write a whole book on how you can build your brand properly, right? Amazon gives you certain tools, amazing tools. So let's start at if you own the brand, right? If you own the brand, you have brand registry. Brand registry enables you to do A+ content for your product. Yes. And most people, what they do is they treat that area for just repost the images that they have already in the image carousel, right? Such a waste, you know? Instead, if they take that thing and actually change it seasonally, right? Seasonally to at least seasonally to, for like 5 seasons, right? 4 regular seasons and then a holiday season, right? So if you change it 5 times a year, you could be telling a different story based on the season, right? For your market, every season you could be changing it. If you are a food brand, you could be showing recipes and change it on a monthly basis, right? And show that how versatile your product is. At a minimum, you have A+ content. If you're a high volume seller, you have A++ content. When you click on the brand and you go to the brand store, that's an amazing platform, right? That gives you so much ability to include videos in there and tell a different, much more detailed story. And that's an amazing platform. Now you have access to Amazon posts also. So that's a social media aspect of it, right? Nobody has stopped you unless you're going up against TOS, right? Terms of service on Amazon, right? For sellers. Nobody has, forbid you to put up videos, videos.
It's great.
Right, or related videos, or actually, if you are building your brand up so much, your consumers in the Amazon review section, they become inspired to actually not just give you a textual review or rating, right, star rating, to give you photos and videos. That's how you build your brand up properly.
That's, consumers do the, you know, that's they're kind of they post as like UGC. It's box opening, it's actually using the product. From the brand side, what type of stories would you tell maybe even for the less, you know, there's some categories like Swedish Fish, it's transactional. It's not like people, some people will champion it. Dang it. That's a good, that's not because everyone has history with
Swedish Fish is a very versatile product. It's not, you just open the thing and put it in your mouth. That's the obvious one, right? Yeah. But people make, they bake cake with it. They put it on their ice cream. There's so many, just think about all the content I just gave you, right?
Well, what
you can put it in your Jello. You could put it, there's so much. You could do fun kids parties and other types of parties and stuff like that. That's content also, the life events, right? There are so many things you could be doing. Seasonally, I could at least at a minimum change the content on the Swedish Fish product. I can change it 5 times a year. You could do even more with Mother's Day, Father's Day, Valentine's Day. You just imagine with...
What about a lemon squeezer, you know? I guess you can still tell a story with a lemon squeezer because the lemon squeezer is, you know, it's making your lemon water, you know, that like a lot of people wake up, you know, the first thing they do is they squeeze a lemon and it wakes them up. So you're telling that story.
What if you're not telling it? That's a technical story, okay. In my opinion. Okay. So that's a technical story about the benefit of the product, right? Of how to use it, right? What if that lemon squeezer is part of a life event? It's how you make people feel about your product, right? And how, like literally you're telling them, no, I'm not selling you this product. I'm selling you how it can enhance your life event, right? That's a completely different kind of selling. You're building that kind of an emotional relationship. The example I gave about the pet products, for example, right? I could go into how the water is so clear and it has 6 nozzles on it and stuff. That's very technical. But if I take a photo of how happy my cat is drinking from it, or it improved her drinking off the water 6 times a day and her fur is so much, look at the fur, and I'm showing the fur on a video and a photo of how the fur is so incredible, or my dog or whatever, right? That's an emotional relationship I have with a consumer. That consumer will keep on coming back to you because you have built that, you built that bridge with them. That's not transactional anymore. That's not technical anymore. It's not, you know, it has so many screws and so many bolts, and that's the engineering side of things, right? But this emotional side of it is one of the hardest things you could do. But if you can even do just a few different ways that your product could be used in a life event, that's amazing content.
You've got me convinced. I mean, for a starting out as a software developer, Sabir, you have figured out the next stages of e-commerce marketing. Let's gloss over some of the next stages to the 8D, just so we can give as much value as we can in the pod.
Sure. So the next one is customer UX, right? So you got your marketing right, you got your pricing right, you got the product positioning right, right? And you did your performance optimization. You listened to me, 1.7 seconds, right? You got them, right? What does the customer user experience look like? So that's the next dimension, right? So you have to think about who is buying from you, right? Who do you want to attract that would actually find value in what you're selling, right? And it cannot be, oh, you know what, this would fit. There are cat owners, right? So there are cat owners, 80 million of them in the United States, right? There are more cat ownership than dog ownership in the United States, right? So statistically, I know that. So 80 million people have cats and, it's 80 million people. No, it's not 80 million people because you don't have even to spend a dollar per consumer. You don't have $80 million a day to spend on ad spend, right? So the answer is no, you don't have 80 million customers. That's the market, but that's not your consumer. So if you can identify which consumers you want to go after, are these consumers own kittens? And did they adopt it or did they go to a breeder? Is it male or female? Is it, you know, multi-cat home or is it a single cat home? I can go through that. It's a list of all those questions, right? Is it a household with a family with kids and the pet is for the kids? Or is it for baby boomers, empty nesters that the kids have gone out and this is their companion, right? Each one of those things, you will approach the same exact product in many different ways. And from there, As you know, whether it's Amazon ads or Meta ads or Google ads, you will look for interests, you will look for keywords, you will look for audiences that are going to be in those kind of niches, and whatever creative you come up with, whatever copy you come up with, will address that consumer journey. And after they engage with you, what are you doing if they didn't buy from you, right? There are platforms like Shopify where you have 100% control over what you can do, right? By doing retargeting and remarketing and stuff like that.
Amazon, I think this is like really new. I think they even just introduced a coupon for people that didn't check out. Maybe they added it to cart or something along that line, and you can give them a coupon. You should be able to send them a little message. I don't know. It's evolving, and like Amazon's trying to lean into exactly what you're saying, and as it grows in sophistication, you know, you would hope that like they give you those levers. No, you're totally right. Like, the more, it's kind of like this phrase, like if you could be, something to someone, that's better than being everything to everyone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that saying is so true in case of e-commerce, right? If you can, address your market and understand what really is your market, right? And sometimes you could take the same product. All of your competitors are going for all of these other categories, but you're focused your product on this one specific niche audience. And now you will champion that audience and you become that niche, leader. You'll become that category leader. And if you have a sizable audience, and sizable audience could be 10 million people in the United States, you know, but that's a gigantic number. Even reaching 10 million people requires a lot of ad budget, you know, if you're spending money on it. I know that Amazon gives you organic reach and stuff like that, so that's good. You get organic sales, but you can do this similar kind of thing over time with SEO on your Shopify site and stuff like that. But still, you still need to have that ad budget in order to, you know, fuel the retargeting, remarketing at a minimum, and then finding these audiences. You are even if you know your total audience is 10 million people, you can barely reach a million of them because of your budget constraints and because until you could really optimize your message to these audiences and stuff like that, it will take time. That means that you're investing in that learning.
All right. I love it. All right. I think we've done five. What's number six?
So six is tech. So this is where, Scott, you shine, right? You're a tech platform.
And as a seller, I'm always the one like, you know, tinkering to like optimize a good inventory manager, any little like thing.
So tech, in case of, you have to think about, when I say tech, I don't mean just like when you think about your each channel needs to have its own tech stack, right? If you're a seller on Amazon, you have your tech stack. There are popular tools. Yeah, you have your tool, right? Smart Scout, I think, is your tool, right? Right, that's your tool that you have, right? Amazing. So that's and it brings a lot of value. But there are a lot of repricing tools, inventory management tools, FBA, fee optimization tools. There are image optimization tools. There are so many. Canva is an amazing tool for even for Amazon, right? So there are so many tools, and that's your tech stack. You need to understand like what tech. Then this is really critical to know. The wrong tech is costing you time to market, and it's costing you money and resources and time, even time in general speaking, right? So you have to be smart about, if you chose something that worked for you in 2008 and you're still using that thing, thinking that that's the best thing since sliced bread, you know what? The sliced bread has changed over, it's 2024. There's AI-based tools that do that same job probably 50 times faster or 500
times faster. Hopefully that 2008 tool evolved with the times.
Yeah. But some people, believe me, there are people I meet that are still using Lotus Notes. Do you know what that tool is?
I've heard the name.
Lotus Notes would be Google Mail or Gmail or Microsoft Exchange, like Microsoft Outlook.
Yeah. I've seen this. That is the old school.
assuming there are companies that still run on mainframe. Yikes. They still run on old school file servers. Holy cow. So that's a huge assumption that people have migrated, or people, maybe the platform may have upgraded, but people may not have upgraded because of upgrade costs are so, you know, in some of those cases, I say, you know what, you can throw out that whole tech and buy a new one and rent it for a fraction of a price.
You don't have to sell the sold. I think this audience, we focus a lot on like new tech platforms, and it's fun. It's fun to have something that just does the job right. We're hitting up on time. This is we've gone on longer because, you know, you just kept throwing out really interesting nuggets to help people improve their business.
So let's go with seven, Scott. So seven is logistics. It's great that you have optimized the other six, dimensions I mentioned. I actually cheated. I said number eight also with number one, which was team. That's number eight. So number seven is logistics. It's great that you're doing a great marketing. You listen to everything I had to say. You got your story down. Your traffic is growing. Your revenue is growing. If your logistics, if you're not paying attention to your logistics, everything could collapse very quickly, right? And being an Amazon seller, if you are not abiding by Amazon KPIs for the upkeep of your seller account or vendor account, what happens, Scott, to your selling privileges?
Oh, yeah, we know. It's an ugly story. And still, you know, still to this day, 2024, people do things that get them suspended. So it's tough.
Yeah. So that part of logistics is not just getting your orders over to FBA, right? It has to do with working with your supply chain, understanding the makeup of your product, because there are manufacturers that could go under in a heartbeat and you had only one manufacturer. What happens to your business? Your business collapsed just now. And that happened, they happen to supply you with, let's say it's multi-product, maybe five of the best sellers in your portfolio. Now your company collapsed. Probably that five best sellers represented 80% of your revenue from Amazon or Shopify, you know? So yeah, you have to understand, like, you know, the logistics means a broader term than just FBA or your 3PL. The 3PL you had for your Shopify orders that was handling it up to $1 million may not be the right partner when you want to grow from 1 million to 10 million or 2.5 million. Maybe you need to figure out that decision needs to be made. So logistic decision, you need to be on top of it, because all of the other dimensions are basically a waste. If you don't have inventory, you don't have a finished product in your hands, and Black Friday is coming up, or you didn't invest and didn't really in a smart way, think about forecasting your demand and buying into that inventory, getting it in time, knowing that there's China New Year that's going to affect you. There's a supply chain issue because of the wars that are going on right now. There are issues with collapse. I mean, there is a relationship issues right now between China and United States because of TikTok, right? Those are just realities of business. You need to be, as a business owner, understand that those things are happening and figure out what you need to do in order to, you know, fend off some of those things. Maybe there's a vendor in Brooklyn that you can hire. Maybe it's going to be expensive. However, you still have a vendor as your backup, and you maybe give 30% of your inventory to them to manufacture so that you have an ongoing relationship with them. Maybe you're still buying 70% of your inventory from China, Thailand, you know, Vietnam and India and stuff like that. But if those kind of issues, world events happen, it doesn't negatively impact your business, but at least you have somebody in Kansas City or Brooklyn or Mexico that can help you still survive.
It's proven to be very critical. And even you can add forecasting. I talked with someone recently, and he's like, of all the things that like he does to improve a business, the number one thing is actually not running out of inventory. Because even today, a lot of great businesses run out of inventory all the time. And if they could finally fix that, it kind of has a compounding effect, because you get punished on platforms if you run out of inventory. Well, Sabir, that covers the eight things that I agree. It's very, not exhaustive, but it's complete. And I actually think there's a lot of challenges, especially in those first five. It's easy for people to get them halfway done or incomplete and not fully optimized. That was my read, is those first five. You do need a lot of experience to figure those things out. So I know you, you help people go through this. That's your thing. So tell me about, you know, you were just talking to me earlier that you have an upcoming, if people want to dig in further and kind of just get a little bit of help on these things. Tell me about that.
So this upcoming Tuesday, I have a Rapid 2X. That's the name of the program, Rapid 2X Live Workshop. You can register by going to growthbysabir.com/workshop. So that if you could share the link in the podcast with people to just click it. So if they go there and register, it's a free workshop. That what I do is I go through these, I talk about the challenges and I go through these dimensions in more detail with case studies so that people who are coming from, whether they're from fashion industry or health and awareness or wellness or furniture or whatever product category, because in the 25 years, I've literally touched every product category, right? Oh, I go through those examples through that so that they can learn about it. And from there, you know, if the fit is right, I have something called a Rapid 2X Accelerator Program that runs for 12 weeks that they can be part of if the fit is right, because not every business fits into that model. So we go through an interview process to see, to vet, the right participants to be part of that Rapid 2X Accelerator Program. It runs over 12 weeks. These eight dimensions take about 12 weeks. And then what we do is, based on this priority that I just mentioned, the sequence, we actually go through it. And some of our clients within that performance optimization have seen Max from Aurum Brothers is a great example. If you've seen his case study, it's on our website, but he is actually going through it. He's halfway into the program, 6 weeks. In the first week, 50% growth. In 6 weeks, he has 112% growth. And I can also tell you that his business, if you compare January 1st through March 7th, has grown already January 1st through April 30th of last year. So that's a tremendous growth, and they're on fire right now. And they're halfway through, like they have completed fourth dimension so far. Right. And then we will finish the rest of the dimensions in the next 6 weeks. So that people will, if they go to growthbysabir.com/workshop, just attend the free live workshop, learn more, and check out the case studies on my website and make sure to apply to the program. Also, after going through the workshop, then apply to the program, because you want to find out what this 8D method is all about. And you want to find out about the nuances and stuff like that. And the live workshop is very helpful for that.
Love it. All right. Well, hey, Sabir, thank you so much for sharing, jumping on and, telling us some interesting stories for the last 20 years of, how e-commerce has changed. But, some things haven't changed. Like, people want to buy stuff that, helps them out. So
it has increased.
Yeah, I know. It's changed for the bigger. Well, thank you so much for your time. And so it's growthbysabir.com/workshop. Well, that's the pod. Super happy to have you come on.
Thank you, Scott, for having me. I had a great time being here and sharing my knowledge.
Okay. Well, with that, everyone, take care, and we'll catch you on the next one.
1, 2, 3.